Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Africa Climate Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Sophie Mbogwa. So, if you have been observing the drought, landslides, and flooding events happening in many of African countries, you will agree with me that they have become more frequent and intense. But the question is, apart from the observation, are African countries investing in infrastructure that will help improve their meteorological and hydrological services and research to understand how the climate is changing in the past, present, and future for different sectors such as agriculture, energy, water, among others, to inform adaptation measures they put in place? I posed this question, among others, to James Kinyangi, the coordinator for the Climate and Development Special Fund for Africa at the African Development Bank, and Mohamed Bambasila, a lead author at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, and currently the research chair in climate change science at the African Institute for Mathematical Sciences, Rwanda. But before we kick off, just a reminder that this podcast is part of a five-part series on green economy made possible by a collaboration with the African Development Bank Group, particularly its Climate Change and Green Growth Department. The African Development Bank Group is the continent's premier development finance institution. James, talking of climate change information, the World Meteorological Organization says that the quality and quantity of weather information and forecast in Africa is well below the required minimum, and it's not able to provide early warning services. Could we start with you expounding on the status of the national meteorological and hydrological services in key African regional blocks?
Thank you. There are big regional differences, Sophie. There are a few countries that you would say have significantly improved services, especially over the last 20 to 25 years. Mm-hmm. We've had investments in national meteorological and hydrological services in countries such as Ethiopia, countries such as Kenya, Tanzania, Morocco, Egypt, that are now more advanced, Nigeria, that are now more advanced and are able to provide for both the upstream generation with advanced observation networks, and also develop a significant amount, quantity of manpower in order to translate the data and observations into applications for climate and weather services. Then you also have another group of countries that has been significantly improving, we could say is in the middle. I can give examples, countries such as Ghana, countries such as Uganda, Botswana, Malawi, Zambia. These are mid-tier countries that have a limited number of observation networks, especially ground observation networks, maybe not so much in upper air observations, but they have a significant development and employment of ground-based observations, and they also have a limited capacity to translate the data that's being collected from their observation networks into climate and weather services and applications for development sectors and also for DRI in the countries. Then you have many countries that are struggling. You have countries that are post-conflict, countries that are in fragile situations, countries such as Somalia, Sierra Leone, Liberia, countries such as Burundi, Djibouti. Those countries have very, very basic facilities. Many of them have only just a few, perhaps less than 10 weather stations that are operational at the moment. Many of them do not have the infrastructure to report into what we call the WMO data reporting system. Many of them do not even have the capacity for forecasting, the capacity for observations. They have very limited manpower, they have very limited budgets. And this is the bulk of where we are in terms of Africa countries, especially in the very vulnerable regions of Southern Africa with the tropical cyclones in the Southern Indian Ocean, the drought across the Sahel and the Horn of Africa, and also the flooding that we see from time to time in many of the Central and West African countries. Yeah. So that's, in a nutshell, that's where we are in terms of Africa's regions. And of course, then there is the complicated case of the small island states, both the Atlantic small island developing states and the Indian Ocean small island developing states, including the island of Madagascar. So in general, that's where we are in terms of the development of weather observation networks across Africa.
Okay. Bambasila, from observation, flooding, drought, landslides are becoming frequent and more intense. But scientifically, are African nations investing enough in understanding how our climate has changed from the past, present, and the future? Are we investing enough in research in climate change information that can inform development within African nations, Bambasila?
Later on, decision-maker, we need to adapt, or we need to reduce the risk, the disaster risk. If you tell that to the decision-maker, so the first question he's going to ask you is, what do we adapt to exactly? Or what are the expected hazards? So what are the risks? So this is, these are the questions they ask you. And then you know that you need to put in place something which is called climate service framework, right? Which is the generation, packaging, delivery, and uptake of climate information or climate products, right? Now, this climate information can be historical conditions, that can be current conditions, or that can be future conditions. Historical conditions, these are the observations, okay? And current conditions, these are what Met Services are doing, like the forecast to inform us what's gonna happen in the next few hours.
Okay.
But when you talk about, future conditions, okay? Which is the projections, the long term, like 2030, 2050, 2100. So these are the projections. And when they are quantified and tailored for sector, they become climate change information. So that's what we call climate change information, okay? So now, the rhetoric in Africa in terms of adaptations has always been, and still it is, we manage what we cannot avoid. And we avoid what we can manage. These are adaptation and mitigations, of course, in terms of hazard and the impact, right? So the question is this: without this climate change information you're talking about, how can we know the hazards we cannot avoid and those we cannot manage? But this is a good question. So unfortunately, in Africa, a lot of funds are invested in adaptations and disaster risk reduction, which is great. So we like that. But nothing, almost nothing, is invested in the development of this climate change information. So this is the problem, yeah. Because I already defined you earlier what is climate change information, right? So with so without knowing the expected changes, so proactive and anticipatory adaptation will fail. So that is for sure. So it's like we're putting the cart before the horses. So it's like prescribing solutions without knowing the problem. This is impossible if you want to develop. When you say, what do you adapt to? What hazard are we expected? Are you expecting? It's not like we're having heat wave that will increase. We're having flood that will increase. We're having drought that will increase. No, you need a quantification of their severity and their frequency. We can call it intensity and frequency. And very important, the time of emergence. So this is very important. When this is going to occur, from when in the time series. And of course, we calculate the relative risk, right? So this is what we need. But this investment to quantify this, these things is almost non-existent in Africa.
Why?
So who exactly? So I'm going to tell you why. So the question I want to ask first is, who have the skill to do this, right? to develop reliable and robust climate change information. Who has the skill? So the skills are at the research centers and university departments, mm-hmm. right? So I can cite, for example, University of Cape Town. They have a climate system analysis group. They are doing a great job on climate change information and data distillation. So you have also the West African Science Service Center on Climate Change and Adapted Land Use. They have a competence center working on those kind of things. But you also have the African Institute for Mathematical Sciences. So first of all, the state, the governments, and the officials from regional bodies, they should know. They have to know that they need climate change information for adaptation and for disaster risk reduction. That's one thing. And the second thing is they have the skills and they have to go there and get the skills.
Mm. Well, it's important to understand the past and the present and future predictions for development.
Yes, because the historical condition will teach us what are the different impacts of different hazards we already faced in the past and how actually did we cope with that. So this is about experience, right? So it's very important to know the historical, okay? Mm-hmm. So now, if we talk about right now, okay? Mm-hmm. Right now, if we take the adaptation chart, so we have incremental adaptation, we have system adaptation, we have transformational adaptations. So the incremental adaptations, dealing with the day-by-day climate variability, right? So the day-by-day conditions we have and we incrementally adapt to that. So this is one thing. So for this, of course, we need med services for that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We start doing the forecast. And then we have system adaptations where you need the RCCs, the Regional Climate Centers, doing the Regional Climate Outlook Forums. And at some point, the research scientists who are actually doing projections. But for this to be useful, so they have to tailor it for different sectors. Now we have transformational adaptations. And this is very important because this transformational adaptation is for the long term. And we predict that the hazards are going to be more intense in the long term. I'm talking about 2060 to 2100, for example, mm-hmm. right? So these transformational adaptations is action that change the fundamental attribute of a climate system. Of a system, not a climate, of a system in general, like society, in response to climate change. And some examples are relocation of entire populations, for example, changing land use patterns, major change to socio-ecological systems. So these are major changes we have to do. So these are transformational adaptations. And these transformational adaptations we need long-term climate change information to proceed with that. So that this you see is very, very, very then important to know the historical period, to know the current climate conditions, and to know the medium to long-term climate. But not just climate, like, oh, precipitation will increase, oh, temperature will increase, oh, precipitation will decrease here. That doesn't make sense. What makes sense is you take a sector and you tailor the climate change information needed by that sector. Like you have agriculture, you have water resources, you have mm-hmm. energy, you have biodiversity, you have infrastructure. So all of these, we need to construct climate information for these sectors for whole Africa. And once we got this, now we can think of, okay, what are the best options we have to adapt? What are the best options to have to reduce the risk?
Mm-hmm. So in that case, take for example South Africa. Right now we are having cases of Durban experiencing water challenges at the moment. So what you're trying to say is that looking like a city of Durban, looking into previously like the past climate information, what were they observed in the past, what is currently happening now. We're taking, for example, their water sector, and also looking into the future projections and the climate modeling in terms of understanding how the climate is projected to be and how it's been. And then from there, understanding the past trends, the present trends, and the future projected trends, they would be in a better position to build adaptation mechanism around the water sector.
Somehow, yeah, to some extent, that's what I said. So the historical period and the current climate conditions can teach you if you have this kind of hazard, these are the impacts, and this is how you have to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the historical and the current climate teach you. Now, in future climate, again, yes, you consider the water sector, and you look at the information which are relevant for the water sector, like water rainfall, for example, water availability, evapotranspiration, for example, right? Drought, you can around drought, and those kind of thing. And you put it to the water sector, and then you can predict the impacts, right? If you predict the impacts, now you understand the problem entirely, because you have the current climate and you have the future climate, right? So you fully understand the problem. When you fully understand the problem, you can prescribe solutions.
Okay.
But again, we need investment in the development of climate change information. And this development is not like you do it once. You have to do it periodically, every 5-6 years, when we have new models, new scenarios, new agreements, new methodologies, right?
Mm-hmm.
IPCC is great. IPCC reports, they are great. But at some point, they're not really actually providing the information that our countries and our sectors need.
Mm.
So the IPCC reports are too broad to me for our countries, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So I think we need to invest on the development of this information, because Europe, they are having their own.
Yeah.
Americas, they're having their own. But in Africa, what prevents us having it?
Mm-hmm.
We need to invest on that.
Perfect. So we need to have investment in terms of local information that can be central to development of that particular country. For example, if it's Rwanda,
that's right.
You know, develop its own climate information geared towards where they want to go in terms of development, right?
That's right. It's very, very, very important that our countries get tailored climate change information for their different development sectors. And this can be done in a coordinated manner with the leadership of AUC and UNECA, and of course WMO. And they need to involve the research centers and university department dealing with climate change, because you have different skills. All the skills you need for this are not at the RCCs, they are not at the Med Services either.
Okay.
So you have to combine RCCs, Med Services, research centers, university department to do that.
James, we're talking about building climate-resilient sectors for development. Hence, different sectors must have this climate change information in order to build right adaptation measures, right? If we do not have good meteorological and hydrological services in many countries, how does that affect decisions in terms of climate resilience? But James, before I let you answer, let me remind our listeners that this conversation is part of a 5-part Green Economy series made possible by a collaboration with Africa's premier development finance institution, the African Development Bank Group, and in particular, its Climate Change and Green Growth Department.
Sophie, big time.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the droughts in the Sahel and the Horn of Africa. We can get initial signals from the global observation systems. Thank God that is possible. So if we get, you know, sets of data and early warning alerts from, NASA and European Meteorological and satellite system, or from, let's say, for example, the UK Met, we can at least be able to detect some of these events early. You know, we can be able to know months ahead that a drought is pending. We can see these tropical cyclones and how they're moving just using the global circulation modeling work. Mm. Now, there's a huge gap between what we see and what warnings we receive and the action that we are able to take. So that aspect of decision making, there is a very big gap in decision making. You know, if you ask me how we can bridge this gap, again, the discussion is very long, but it's about building capacities. It's about building capacities for downscaling some of those global data sets and global modeling into regional capabilities, which is something we have been doing here at the African Development Bank with the Climate Development Africa Special Fund.
Yeah.
In order to provide regional teams with capacity for modeling high performance computing systems, but also to downscale that to countries so that some of those early warnings can be generated at the country level and even be cascaded to the local community. So if you take the example of tropical cyclone Idai that hit the port city of Beira in Mozambique, you can see from the global modeling data sets, you can see the movement of that storm across the Southern Indian Ocean. But once that storm hit the port city of Beira, you have to make sure that there is capacity with the local disaster management teams in Beira to be able to anticipate and respond to the impacts of the storm in terms of flooding, in terms of saving people and property, in terms of making sure that there is infrastructure to support the municipalities and the local districts and the rural areas within the irrigation schemes that were flooded to be able to recover back, to recover and to build back better.
So that means it's very important, even if there is countries, we can get projections from the international sources and stuff, it's very important to actually have climate and weather information generated within country levels.
Absolutely. This is key because this is where we anticipate that a lot of the decisions that are made are going to be translated into action. So if I go back again and give the example of Mozambique, if you're thinking about what the INGC, which is the Disaster Management Authority in Mozambique, can do with the information that they receive, they have to have the capacity to mobilize their on-ground teams to move into these disaster areas, to anticipate, move populations, provide information over the local media through print and other administrative jurisdictions in order to make sure that people are cleared from harm's way and also that property is secured against the damage of the tropical cyclone. So it's a whole chain of events from the global data sets and modeling that demonstrates and shows us how to anticipate these extreme events, all the way down to the local jurisdictions that prepare in order to support, to move people and property out of harm's way.
Okay.
And I might add, Sophie, also, not just thinking about the DRR side, but if you think about the development sectors, let me again quickly give the example of the Kariba Dam on the Zambezi River.
Yeah.
The hydroelectric station there is very important for providing energy to those two countries, Zambia and Zimbabwe. And in the last 10 or 15 years, it has experienced its lowest ever fill of water in the dam due to the impacts upstream on the Zambezi River, but also due to the climate variability in that region that has resulted in a low volume of recharge for the river in order to fill the dam. So if you think about the last 15 years, how it could have been possible to gather that information and do some long-term modeling and anticipate that some of the very low fill levels of the dam will be experienced during this last decade. Mm-hmm. That could have allowed the two countries to make the sufficient plans for alternative energy sources.
Sure.
And it's very sad that we are now in a period where the two countries are scrambling to find resources that you and I understand have many other priorities to put together alternative energy sources in order to meet the demand for energy for the populations for those two countries.
Absolutely. And that is what the Climate and Development Africa Special Fund is helping countries, in bridge these particular gaps?
Yes. So we're doing that at three or four different levels. First, let me mention that we are deploying some grant resources to the regional climate centers across Africa. That's the Africa Center for Meteorological Applications and Development, ACMAD. Mm-hmm. The Sahel SEALS Climate Center Agrimet, the SADC Climate Center in Gaborone, and also the IGAD Climate Prediction Center in Nairobi, as well as now we have created a new center for Central Africa that is based in Douala in Cameroon. So that's the ECAS Climate Center. Mm-hmm. So we are building the capacity of these centers first in the applications and modeling itself. We are strengthening them in their physical facilities. We are also providing support to train a new generation of scientists. And then we are also supporting the installation of power, internet, and communications facilities in order that a lot of the information that's being generated from the technical modeling teams and other support functions within the centers can be shared with the countries in the regions. So, for example, ECAS that provides services to 10 countries in Central Africa, mm-hmm. there is that network that a lot of the work that is being done at the regional climate center can then cascade down to the countries.
Okay.
So that's one level at which we're working. The second level where we're working is to make sure that the countries also have some limited capacity. So we are providing the countries with low performance computing clusters in order to strengthen the national and hydrological and meteorological services in their ability to receive data and compute that data. Third, what we're doing is we are building the capacities of these regional engagement platforms, borrowing on the expertise of the WMO Global Framework on Climate Services in order to create this network within countries where it is easy to share information back and forth seamlessly. Mm-hmm. Let me give a quick example here in Ivory Coast. We have supported the development of a national disaster risk response platform where the local MET agency, SODEXAM, is able to freely distribute and share information, early warning alerts for flooding events for the city of Abidjan. So that kind of a network, when we create it into a country network, I think is very important in responding to some of these extreme events.
Absolutely.
And then lastly, mm-hmm. what we're doing is that we are making sure that we're able to help create a more sustainable financing mechanism by supporting the applications of countries to the Green Climate Fund to find additional resources to invest in building their climate and early warning systems, including work with WMO now to create what we call the Global Systematic Observation Financing Facility, mm-hmm. Which will be a facility that will provide for this gap of between 2.5 to 3 billion US dollars that is required to modernize climate observation networks in order that countries are able to report their data into what we call the Global Basic Observation Network so mm-hmm. that they become what we call GBON compliant.
Okay. And before I let you go, I'm wondering in terms of technology, because technology is required in terms of these countries to have on ground and on air infrastructure that they're able to do the monitoring? Is the project,
yes,
is it helping in terms of them countries install and have such kind of infrastructure available?
Yes. So Sophie, we provide a limited set of grants. So our grants are only very limited. They will perhaps be just in the region of about €1 million, €1.5 million, all the way to €5 million. Mm-hmm. And these are, you know, project preparation facilities. There are grants that, technical assistance to countries, and to enable them to prepare themselves in a way in which they can access bigger pots of resources to invest in creating their own infrastructure for climate and weather observation, but also develop their own services for the development sectors and DRR. Okay. Now, having said that, let me say, in terms of the technologies, we are lagging behind. Okay. But let me talk about two areas of focus. One, there is traditionally what we call the ground-based observations, uh-huh, as well as the upper air observations.
Yeah.
If you look at the coverage for ground-based observations, if you look at my colleague Lars Peter at WMO in Geneva, uh-huh, likes to show this map of the function of ground-based observation systems globally. And you see all these dark spots around Africa, which show that many of the ground-based stations in Africa are not reporting data to the WMO Global Transmission System, which we call the GTS. Now, if you look at that technology, these are traditionally the types of stations that we've historically had that are collecting historical data and information that's related to climate and weather. We have very poor coverage in Africa. So we need to work on making sure we improve the coverage of ground-based observation stations. Mm-hmm. Now, including also upper air observation. Now, upper air observation is very important because of both aviation and also to some limited extent, marine transport. Secondly, when you compare the use of what we now call Earth observation, so Earth observation has to do with the remote sensed applications and satellite-based tools. None of the African countries is perhaps running their own satellite. Meaning that a lot of our regions have to hook up onto satellites that are being run by European institutions and North American, Japanese, Asian institutions that are the polar orbiting satellites in order to access information and data packets that are related to Earth observation. Mm. So this is an area which is completely underdeveloped, one, because we don't have the expertise, two, because we don't have the basic receiving stations across Africa. The ClimDev Special Fund has, in a fast for Africa, is installing four regional retransmission stations. One is going to be based at SANSA, the South African Space Agency. A second one is going to be based in Gabon at AGIOS. A third one is going to be based in Niamey, Niger at AGRIMET. And a fourth one is now being located at IGPAC. These regional retransmission stations are going to provide the coverage for that section of Africa that has not been covered by orbiting satellites. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be able to receive that satellite data and satellite information. And regional centers that are working with this type of information for numerical weather prediction and forecasting for extreme events will be able to access this information from now onwards. Hopefully the stations are up and running by the beginning of next year. So if you couple that with, as I mentioned, transport, especially air transport, very critical across Africa, mm-hmm, to improve air transport across Africa. The installation of regional radar also is very important. So in terms of technology, again, we're still lagging behind. Only a few countries are able to afford regional radar. Maybe there's one in Tanzania, there might be one in Kenya, there could be two in Nigeria. But you have these large parts of the regions in Africa that are not covered by regional radar, and therefore we have that very big gap in being able to service both the air transport sector and also the marine sector.
Yeah. Just the final one, Bambasela, if you can just quickly add on what are the existing gaps and what needs to be done.
For example, one typical example, all right? So the tropical cyclone that hit Mozambique, yeah, but it touched somehow all that region, right? So we don't know its return period. We don't know the return period of those kind of events. So this is one thing. So the second thing is, do we know how flood is going to intensify? And what's going to be its frequency in our African cities, for example? And how much this is going to increase or decrease, and where? And what would be the contribution, for example, of different factors that I can tell here, of course, that precipitation is one of it, right? So we don't know. Do we know how drought is going to increase in the future? Mm-hmm. So this is also another problem. Because we say, oh yeah, we see heat wave is going to increase, drought is increasing, and this may increase in the future. But this is too broad. So what will happen in Senegal? What will happen in Kenya? What will happen in Tanzania? What's going to happen in Rwanda, South Africa? Do we have a quantification of drought severity and drought frequency and drought intensity, for example? Do we have a percentage of it? Do we know the time of emergence of these extremes, of these hazards? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things to do. And we need actually to quantify all of this before actually diving into deep adaptations. Mm. Otherwise, again, it's like a blind man driving a car. So that's how it looks like.
Bambasela and James, unfortunately, that's all the time we had today. But I sincerely appreciate you for taking your time today to join this conversation.
Thank you very much, Sophie. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Sophie.
And that was James Kinyangi, the coordinator for the Climate in Development Special Funds for Africa at the African Development Bank Group, and Mohammed Bambasela, a lead author at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, and currently the research chair in climate change science at the African Institute for Mathematical Sciences, Rwanda, discussing the status of climate change information in Africa. Remember, this conversation was made possible by a collaboration with the continent's premier development finance institution, the African Development Bank Group, particularly its Climate Change and Green Growth Department. Just a reminder, you can access this podcast anytime on our website, Africa Climate Conversations, and every other channel you access your podcast from. Please do not forget to share this podcast, because someone on your network would benefit from this conversation. Until next week, kwaheri, have a productive and safe week ahead.